Senator Stevens, if he were here, would, unless he just turned 180 degrees, he'd say, what are you doing?
House Democrats turn a budget discussion into a debate over Medicaid expansion. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Thursday, March 12th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, the UAF rifle team prepares to host the NCAA championships.
To be here and have, you know, the people that I've grown up with being able to see it all, it's fantastic.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by
First National Bank Alaska, where local knowledge and experience make the difference. We believe in Alaska. Learn more at fnbalaska.com. Equal housing lender, member FDIC.
And by
your friends, family, and neighbors at Raven Alaska, connecting over 100 communities across the state. Find out more at flyraven.com.
Robert Papp, the U.S. Special Representative for the Arctic, says he questions reports that Russia has launched a major military buildup in the Arctic. Papp says he's asking U.S. intelligence agencies to look beyond Russia's military swagger for a realistic view of its Arctic activities. Papp says Moscow could be adding infrastructure for general use in the north.
One person can look at what's going on in terms of what they call military buildup, and rightfully say they've got an awful long border along the Arctic, and if you're going to have increased maritime traffic, you should have search and rescue facilities, you should have modern airports and other things that I would like to see built in Alaska as maritime activity increases.
Army Chief of Staff Ray Odierno said at a U.S. Senate hearing yesterday morning that Russia's military buildup in the Arctic has his attention.
So we have seen over the last several years a obviously increased interest in the Russians in the Arctic. There are clear indications, as the chairman mentioned, that they are increasing their presence and building bases, so in the future they will be able to increase their presence and have an impact in the Arctic region.
Last week, the Secretary of Defense said much the same, and the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff said Russia is activating 4 new brigades in the Arctic. The U.S. and other Arctic nations have imposed sanctions on Russia for its incursions in Ukraine. But Papp says the Obama administration and other Arctic countries also agree it's important not to shut Russia out.
For the good of the Arctic, for the environment, and other important issues, we need to keep Russia in the fold and keep communications open. We are all committed to that.
Papp, a retired Coast Guard admiral, spoke this morning at the Brookings Institution in Washington. Debate on the state's operating budget is now underway in the Alaska House of Representatives. Democrats have proposed 22 amendments, and discussion of the bill is expected to last into the late hours. The minority opened with an effort to restore Medicaid expansion, APRN's Alexander Gutierrez reports.
It's often said in the Capitol that a budget is a moral document, an exercise where lawmakers literally spend money on the things they value. With that in mind, the House Minority Caucus traditionally offers a series of changes that promote their platform, but are rarely adopted by the majority. At the top of the priority list right now is expanding the state's Medicaid program. Representative Andy Josephson, an Anchorage Democrat, offered language to accept federal dollars for that purpose.
I think there is a moral imperative. So I would ask that we expand Medicaid. And I think this can be done. And I think that the economy would be better, people would be better, people would be healthier.
The amendment, which failed on caucus lines, would have allowed the state to accept nearly $150 million in federal funds so that Alaskans near the poverty line can get health care through Medicaid. Expansion has been a major priority of Governor Bill Walker, and the budget he sent to the legislature included a line to do just that. But the House Finance Committee removed the language, with some members saying the budget was not the appropriate vehicle for expansion. The Medicaid debate highlighted some of the fractures on the issue, not only in the legislature, but within the Republican majority caucus. Some Republicans, like Representative Shelley Hughes of Palmer, categorically oppose Medicaid expansion on ideological grounds.
And in the coming years, it's time for communities to pull together. It's time for churches to step up. It's time to help, give a hand to someone as individuals. We can be kind as people. It's not the government's place to be kind. We need to be kind as people.
But others, like Representative Dan Sadler of Eagle River, rejected the amendment on the basis of process. If the legislature is going to consider expanding its Medicaid program, Sadler said the action should be done through a larger reform bill.
This amendment, sir, has no cost control provisions. It has no overutilization control for emergency room visits. It has no provision for health safety accounts.
In response, Democrats spent nearly an hour touting the economic and health benefits of expansion. As part of the Affordable Care Act, the federal government would pay the entire cost of expansion in the first years and then cover 90% after 2020. Amendment sponsor Andy Josephson said it was unusual for Alaska to go out of its way to reject federal money, invoking the name of the late Ted Stevens, who aggressively brought funding to Alaska during his tenure in Congress.
I think that Senator Stevens, if he were here, would, unless he just turned 180 degrees, he'd say, what are you doing? Why don't you reap the benefit of $1.1 billion, 4,000 jobs?
The amendment failed 11 to 26. Even though it was an up-down vote, the issue of Medicaid expansion may come up again in the legislature. Members of the House Health and Social Services Committee are taking part in a Medicaid working group, and a reform bill is in the works in the Senate. Overall, the operating budget before the House spends $4 billion from the state's unrestricted general fund and cuts approximately $275 million in agency operating funds compared to the budget passed last year. Even with the cuts, the state is facing a deficit in excess of $3 billion. In Juneau, I'm Alexandra Gutierrez.
The Alaska Department of Revenue expects a proposed tax credit for the Agrium fertilizer plant in Nikiski to cost the state between $3 million and $4 million in foregone revenue annually. The credit legislation would allow ammonia and urea plants to reduce their corporate income tax liability if they use Alaska natural gas in the production process. While the bill does not mention Agrium by name, the purpose is to encourage the plant to resume operations after it shut down in 2007 because of a decline in the natural gas supply. With the supply situation improved, Agrium is now considering spending $200 million to reopen the plant. House Speaker Mike Chenault is sponsoring the incentive bill, and the plant is in his district. The Nikiski Republican says the bill would bring hundreds of jobs to the Kenai Peninsula.
This is about putting more Alaskans to work at good, high-paying jobs that are, that'll last a long time. So I'm more, if you want to call it pork, go ahead, but I'm more interested in trying to put Alaskans to work.
Chenault attempted to establish the tax credit last year as part of a refinery bill, but failed. Now the tax credit bill comes as the state faces a major deficit. Anchorage Democrat Les Guerra says offering low-interest loans might be a more appropriate incentive given the budget climate.
I'm going to have to be convinced that at a time of a $3.5 billion budget deficit, the state needs to engage in more corporate subsidies.
Chenault says he recognizes the bill comes at a time of budget cutting, but he says the state will lose the opportunity to help bring the facility back online if lawmakers don't act now. At the time it was operating, the Nikiski Agrium facility was the second largest producer of ammonia and urea in the country. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, some mushers are embracing sled trailers, others are disparaging them.
If I were a dog, I wouldn't be wanting to be towed around by a bunch of other dogs and some kennel down a trail.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Condor Airlines, with nonstop service from Ted Stevens International Airport to Germany and beyond. More information available on Condor.com. Condor, born to fly. The Medallion Foundation and Federal Aviation Administration set standards for the operation of aircraft and airports. More information at faa.gov/go/flyalaska. This message is sponsored by the Medallion Foundation.
The Coast Guard is teaming up with emergency personnel in Unalaska to practice their response to a mass shooting on the docks in one of the region's busiest ports. KUCB's Lauren Rosenthal has more.
On a typical Friday afternoon, the Unalaska Marine Center might be taking deliveries of cargo or playing host to a visiting Coast Guard vessel. This week, a lone gunman will approach the cutter Monroe at its berth and begin firing off blanks, according to Unalaska Fire Chief Zach Chasteen.
Police will respond, fire EMS will take care of the injuries along with the Coast Guard crew, and transport the patients to the simulated medical facility. And once that's done, Ports Department will start notifying the industrial partners, meaning the folks that have an interest over at the dock.
Fuel suppliers and shipping personnel may conduct searches at their own facilities. They'll be on the lookout for bombs that could pop up during an attack on the port. The marine industry's conducted similar exercises in the past, and Unalaska's police department has been called to check on reports of gunfire from at least one fishing boat. But mounting a full-scale drill was the Coast Guard's idea. The agency is responding to a string of shootings on military bases, including one of their own. A few years ago, a disgruntled Coast Guard employee killed two co-workers at a communications office in Kodiak. Public Affairs Officer Diana Honings says all Coast Guard personnel should know how to handle a gunman, even those who primarily work at sea aboard cutters.
People rotate very often, so we get new people in and we need to train them for these kind of scenarios. We are practicing the tactics, and I can't go into the law enforcement stuff for operational security, but we do have to ensure that everyone is aware of what they need to do in that kind of situation.
That includes reaching out to local law enforcement. Unalaska's fire chief expects to iron out some differences in terminology and work on systems for making radio calls to the Coast Guard. Beyond that, Chasteen says this is a rare opportunity for volunteer firefighters and EMTs to stretch their skills.
In Unalaska, we see a number of traumatic calls, primarily industrial trauma relating to the fishing industry and support services. Fortunately for us, what we don't see a lot of is ballistic injuries.
Chasteen's planning to keep it that way. He says police officers will trade in their weapons for non-functional rubber versions during the drill, and the gun that the active shooter will be using isn't capable of firing live rounds. In Unalaska, I'm Lauren Rosenthal.
A conservative political action committee in the Mat-Su Valley is wading into the Anchorage mayor's race. The Palmer-based group is endorsing Amy Demboski's mayoral campaign, in part because of her stance on a contentious equal rights measure. KSKA's Zechariah Hughes reports.
The president of the Alaska Republican Assembly PAC, Daniel Hamm, is traveling abroad, but says in an email the group is gearing up to support the mayoral candidate most in line with fiscal and socially conservative values. And they've picked Eagle River Chugiak Assemblymember Amy Demboski, who says she's spoken with the group in the past, but not since they formed a PAC, in keeping with campaign laws.
Our campaigns aren't coordinating at all. Once I learned they had a PAC, I just haven't had any communications with them.
The Alaska Republican Assembly PAC hasn't spent any money on ads yet, but plans to starting next week. A Facebook post described by Hamm as a work in progress emphasizes Demboski's commitment to veto, quote, any homosexual ordinance. It's a reference to Proposition 5, the failed voter initiative from 2012 to overturn Mayor Dan Sullivan's veto of an anti-discrimination measure. While she has nothing to do with the Facebook post, Demboski says the claims are accurate.
I have heard rumors, and I've had other people tell me that Prop 5 has been redrafted and is ready to be introduced after the mayor's race. So if anybody's wondering how I would come down on it, I would absolutely veto Prop 5.
Both Demboski and the Alaska Republican Assembly PAC say measures like Prop 5 that create protected groups in the legal code infringe on the religious and free speech rights of those who object to same-sex relationships. Critics say firm anti-discrimination laws are needed to ensure equal protection for all Anchorage residents. Hamm explains that while the Alaska Republican Assembly's center of membership is in the Mat-Su Valley, the organization itself is statewide and has a keen interest in the outcome of the race to lead Alaska's largest city. In Anchorage, I'm Zechariah Hughes.
Financial disclosures earlier this week show that former Assemblymember Dan Coffey has raised by far the most money from donors in the Anchorage mayor's race, more than $250,000 since launching his campaign in 2013. He's also spent the most, $124,000, in just the last month, most of it on signs, mailers, and radio ads. Coffey has a broad range of support from members of the business community, including developers and realtors. The second largest war chest belongs to Andrew Helcrow, former president of the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce, who raised over $100,000 since announcing his candidacy in January. But most of that money, $85,000, is from Helcrow himself. Assemblymember Amy Demboski has also put a lot of her own money into the race, $45,000 so far, which she says is part of a commitment to match donors dollar for dollar. The last major fundraiser in the race is Ethan Berkowitz, who reports bringing in nearly $62,000. He entered the race in February and raised the most funds during the most recent reporting period. Following the announcement that Swanson's grocery store would be closing, a rapid response team from the Alaska Department of Labor was dispatched to Bethel Wednesday. KYUK's Ben Matheson has more.
The specialists came to assist the 80 employees from Swanson's grocery store who will lose their jobs when the store closes Friday. Eileen Hendrickson is manager for the YK Delta Job Center.
Hopefully we're able to work with the employees and be able to find them jobs relatively quickly, or at least get them into a training program, or, you know, kind of basically whatever they want to do. We're here to help them if we can.
The store, run by Omni Enterprises, is closing less than a year after they moved into a new building owned by the Bethel Native Corporation. The company is liquidating inventory with a half-off sale, and customers are still waiting in long lines to buy groceries. Amid the busy week for employees, the team set up shop in the break room and met with small groups. Hendrickson says she plans to connect local businesses with the large, newly unemployed group of workers.
Definitely going to be helping them with resumes, job searches, job placement, whatever we can to help them. I'm looking at putting together an open house for the Swanson employees to come in on Monday at the job center, and we'll be having local businesses and recruiters and people from other training programs that would be able to kind of give them other options.
Joe Nevak worked full-time in the electronics department. He said he was a little down when he first heard of the closure, but he's now beginning to apply for new jobs. After meeting with the team, he was optimistic about new opportunities.
I mean, that's pretty good news, too.
What do you want to do?
Well, I thought about getting a CDL or something like that and go training, get a certificate so I can find a better job, you know.
Outgoing cashier manager Monica Yako is stressed because she has 6 kids at home and 2 days left of work. She spoke with the specialists about getting her GED. She says she will likely have to move out of Bethel, and that brings up a lot of emotion.
I like being a cashier. I liked working in the store because I've been doing it for so long. But I don't know. I just think it's time to move forward and find something else to do.
As for her future plans, she says she wants to become a nurse. Anna Tom worked in the clothing department. Her plan was more nebulous.
Higher power will lead the way. That's my goal.
The rapid response team only had 1 day scheduled in Bethel. The YK Delta Job Center, however, plans to continue to assist the laid-off employees. In Bethel, I'm Ben Matheson.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
The MBA program at Alaska Pacific University offers working professionals courses designed to fit their busy lifestyles. With hybrid online and in-person classes, the MBA at APU is an accelerated, affordable, and high-quality pathway to career advancement. Learn more by calling 800-252-7528 or visiting alaskapacific.edu. This message sponsored by APU.
The School of Management at the University of Alaska Southeast is open for business with courses in accounting, human resources, and public administration. Degree programs and courses available online. More at uas.alaska.edu. This message sponsored by University of Alaska Southeast.
Interest in a potential gold and copper deposit near Non-Dalton has put the village's tribe and corporation at odds. As KDLG's Matt Martin reports, Non-Dalton's village corporation, Kijik, has entered into an agreement to explore the groundhog claims, and that doesn't sit well with all shareholders.
Back in January, Kidjik entered into a partnership with Alaska Earth Sciences to explore the Groundhog deposit located near Non-Dalton. AES is a junior mineral exploration company that has experience exploring deposits along the Alaska Peninsula. Located to the northwest of the Pebble deposit, Groundhog was explored by a previous company before it went bankrupt. The partnership between AES and Kidjik, named Chuchuna Mineral Company, wants to continue the effort. But not all of Kidjik's shareholders are pleased with this development. In a strongly worded letter, the Non-Dalton Tribal Council says that the decision by Kidjik is, quote, a slap to the face for the majority of the people of Non-Dalton.
You know, what we have around here is more precious than any mine can ever, you know, pull out of the ground.
That's William Evanoff, the president of the Non-Dalton Tribal Council.
We have one of the greatest natural resources, you know, with our salmon coming every summer, and that's something that we want to keep around forever, and mining can jeopardize that. And that's something that we've always stated, and, you know, we're not the only ones that have stated that.
Evanoff says many in the community, including himself, were shocked that Kidjik didn't seek any input from shareholders before they went ahead and partnered with the mining company.
One of the things I'd like to see happen is them, you know, come back here and hold an informational meeting with the tribe and the shareholders to let us know what exactly they expect to get out of this partnership and why they felt this was the best decision for Kidjik in the first place.
In the corporation's newsletter, Kidjik CEO Venture Samaniego told shareholders that the first order of business for the new partnership will be to aggressively market the Groundhog prospect to potential developers. He added the joint venture will give Kidjik shareholders priority consideration for future jobs and contracts on the project. In Dillingham, I'm Matt Martin.
The CEO of Kidjik didn't respond to a request for comment for this story. Aaron Burmeister is out in front on the Iditarod Trail heading to the village of Huslia. He's followed by Martin Boozer and Dallas Seavey. Several other top mushers are resting right now, taking their 24-hour layovers in Galena or Ruby. Whether sled dogs are in need of rest will start to show as teams near the halfway mark in this year's race. More mushers than ever are towing trailers behind their sleds to carry dogs as they travel down the trail. As Emily Schwing reports, the jury is still out on whether the method actually does benefit dogs.
Trailers aren't new to the Iditarod, but they have become more popular. It's a method most mushers attribute to Jeff King. He came up with the idea a few years back because he was tired of riding his brake to slow down his team, and he wanted to keep dogs fresh for the end of the race.
You know, you get in halfway in a race or three quarters of the way and go, gosh, if I had this team like they were at the start, wouldn't that be something?
King carries gear in his trailer to distribute weight more evenly. He can also tow two or three dogs down the trail. He says it's an efficient way to save on speed and power.
You know, people are going to drop dogs that, you know, yesterday they could have put in for 9 hour rest and 40 miles less running and they'd be the best dog in the team.
But Dallas CV says it's easy to misuse a trailer.
I think you're going to see a lot of teams believing their dog teams are Superman because they're carrying dogs and going to overextend themselves. We're also going to see people carrying dogs when they shouldn't, carrying dogs to the deficit of the rest of the team.
Yeah, I think they should be illegal. I don't like them at all.
Hugh Neff jokingly refers to trailers as doggy hotels.
You know, if I were a dog, I wouldn't be wanting to be towed around by a bunch of other dogs in some kennel down a trail. It's, to me, not what is the historical, you know, meaning of dog mushing.
Former Iditarod champion Martin Boozer is also skeptical.
I just haven't seen the benefit. I haven't seen the mathematical or the scientific proof that there is actually something good for the dogs. I mean, if you want to be truthful, they're all copycats doing what Jeff King is doing, and I just haven't done that quite yet. I don't see any need for dragging dogs up and down the trail.
Once teams leave Galena, there are two runs over land that both exceed 80 miles. That could challenge teams that have traveled mostly long, flat river miles since the start. Trailer or not, any added rest is likely to pay off. On the Iditarod Trail, I'm Emily Schwing in Galena.
The National Collegiate Athletic Association Division I Rifle Championships are being held at the University of Alaska Fairbanks on Friday and Saturday. As KUAC's Dan Ross reports, the championships bring together shooters capable of extreme accuracy.
Eight collegiate teams, plus several individual qualifiers from around the country, will be competing in small bore and air rifle competitions at the University of Alaska Fairbanks Paddy Center. West Virginia University is ranked number one, barely ahead of UAF in the NCAA standings.
We're 1 point behind them, ranked number two.
That's UAF rifle team coach Dan Jordan. Jordan says favorites often shoot well at nationals, but cautions the sport is full of surprises.
Anything can happen. Matches are decided by tenths of a point. So it literally comes down to sometimes the last shot.
A practice round is fired at the UAF shooting range. To most Alaskans, shooting accuracy means being able to hit a moose with a large round and the assistance of a high-powered scope, a skill for sure, but nothing like the precision required for competitive marksmanship.
The target that we're shooting at is 10 meters away, and the 10 ring, the bullseye, is a half a millimeter in diameter. So it's the size of a period at the end of the sentence in the newspaper.
Jordan says it's not uncommon for elite NCAA shooters to hit 50-plus bullseyes in a 60-shot air rifle competition.
To think about hitting something that small, freestanding with no magnification, it's a huge amount of talent, huge amount of effort.
Jordan says the athletes who can do that must control both body and mind. UAF shooter Tim Sherry of Colorado says he consults a checklist of key words and phrases to clear his head before every competition.
I have a phrase, take out the trash, which is, you know, just take out all of the stuff in your head that doesn't matter right now.
Sherry says he hopes to channel the increased pressure and attention at NCAAs to better his focus. Rifle is a rare co-ed NCAA sport, and individual champions have been divided equally between men and women over the years. UAF team member Laura Lee Stanfield of Fairbanks stresses that the championships are technically just like any other match, but it's special having them in her hometown.
To be here and have, you know, the people that I've grown up with being able to see it all, and to be like, yeah, I'm from here and this is where I'm at now, it's fantastic.
The NCAA Rifle Championships get underway Friday with small bore competition in the UAF shooting range, but Saturday afternoon's air rifle finals will be in the gym, where Coach Jordan says the atmosphere will transcend the normal quiet of a match.
We have announcers that are talking about what's going on, they're announcing the scores, and it's a low man out elimination thing, so people are getting kicked out.
Jordan says the gym will be set up with large screens showing targets, a fan interactive environment he hopes attracts over 1,000 people to watch. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org, and you can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Lauren Rosenthal in Unalaska, Zachariah Hughes in Anchorage, Ben Matheson in Bethel, Matt Martin in Dillingham, Emily Schwing on the Iditarod Trail, and Dan Bross in Fairbanks. APRN's Alexander Gutierrez reported from Juneau and Liz Ruskin from Washington, D.C. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web producer. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, stocking rope, chain, and boat anchors from 5 to 3,000 pounds on the web at arcticwirerope.com. Raven Alaska, connecting Alaskans across the state for more than 50 years. Find more at flyraven.com.
And by
Alaska Pipeline Service Company, committed to safety, operating the 800-mile Trans-Alaska Pipeline since 1977. If you're ready to quit tobacco, Alaska's Tobacco Quit Line can help with free confidential coaching and support services through the telephone and online. Now introducing Text to Quit, a way to help you use medications correctly, manage urges, and prevent relapse all from your mobile phone. Call 1-800-QUIT now or visit alaskaquitline.com for more information. This message sponsored by Alaska's Tobacco Prevention and Control Program.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.